Welcome to this week's edition of the Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. Keith, how we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Got another guest on tonight to stick with the strength and conditioning topics. We've had a couple of those on. Obviously, we feel this is a very important thing to cover. The man that we got joining us today, he's held strength and conditioning positions at a number of different locations, being Virginia Tech, NC State, and also some time with the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's got a master's degree in education from Virginia Tech. He's got an MBA in sports management from the Seton Hall Stillman School of Business. He's also an author. He co-authored Finish Strong, Resistance Training for Endurance Athletes. And he recently released a book called The Next 4 Years, Compete, Win, and Thrive in College Athletics, which focuses on transitioning from high school to college athletics in the weight room, which is obviously very relevant to what we do. We would like to welcome Angelo Gingerelli, the assistant strength coach from Seton Hall University podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Andy, Keith, man, super happy to be here and talk some baseball and development with you guys. Super happy to be a part of what you guys are doing with EMD Baseball.
Heck yeah. Take a couple minutes. I mean, you've been in this industry for a while. You've worked at some pretty big name institutions. You worked with the Pirates. Take a couple minutes and tell the listeners kind of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, man, I grew up in New Jersey at the Jersey Shore, where unfortunately, where they filmed that MTV TV show, was where I grew up. And I went to a public high school that had a strength and conditioning coach, and it was a great coach. It kind of changed my life. I was playing baseball and some other sports and just fell in love with the weight room, kind of like a lot of kids do. I just decided I wanted to do that. So I was graduating high school in the late 90s, and the idea of being a full-time strength coach as a professional was kind of new. It's a kind of new field. And I went to school for exercise science, and then I went to the higher education, do it's a great intro you did. And then I've been at on the baseball. I've worked predominantly baseball every place I've ever been. So in order, that would be Virginia Tech, NC State, the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then for the last 20 years, Seton Hall University in New Jersey. As your listeners probably know from the guests you've had on, 20 years in a regular job is a good run. 20 years in a college athletics job is like 3 or 4 careers for most people. But I found something that's really good. Got to be a part of a great baseball program and a couple of good other programs as well. But baseball is definitely one of our spotlight premier programs at the Hall. And it's been to be able to be a part of that and work with a lot of good baseball players. And the idea for the book came out because, you know, we have pretty good basketball, pretty good baseball, pretty good softball programs. But for 20 years, everybody that comes to college comes unprepared. From your all-American blue-chip kids that are the most high-recruited kids in the country to your walk-ons, I just see kids come unprepared. We can argue the way kids are year-round athletes now, and they're playing every tournament, every showcase. It's arguably gotten worse in the last 10 years than it was before that, because there's no time in the year to train. And the weight room and the conditioning hits most college freshman student-athletes like a Mack truck, right? And I feel like what I've done in our weight room, our 250 student athletes, has done a good job of ramping them up and getting them going. But I just wanted to get that message out to more people and try to help more student athletes make a good, smooth transition to college than they would without the book or my guidance.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to dive into some stuff here, you know, that's kind of college specific, and I want to get your insights on some like foundational stuff that guys should be doing. But take a couple minutes and talk about what's in the book, some stuff that readers, just to give an idea of exactly what you got there and give them a chance to better understand how you pulled that all together.
Great. So the first half of the book is basically about the transition from high school student athlete to collegiate student athlete in all factors, right? So it's the weight room, it's the field, it's the academic side of it, how to address nutrition, how to deal with your classes when you're on the road for maybe 3 days a week if you're a baseball player and you got some midweek games going on, and how to just go from what I always say. And your senior year in high school, you live in a house with your family. Your freshman year in college, you live in a room with a kid you just met. That might be a great experience. It might be a bad experience, but it's a different experience. And there's not a lot of info out there to express to people what that difference is like, right? So the example I always gave, and I think there's a lot of great things about college that made my career in it. And I always say, none of the coaches I deal with at Seton Hall are liars, but they are good salesmen and good saleswomen, right? When you're getting recruited, I'm not saying you're being lied to, but they're selling you the best version of things. When we bring you in the weight room, I show you the chrome plates. I show you the great sound system. I show you all the stuff we offer. It's all true. Also true is I'm going to see you 4 days a week at 6 a.m. and we're going to crush in the weight room before you hit, before you throw a bullpen, before you go to team practice, before you have mandatory study hall at night, right? And I think it's a weird consumer, the college consumer, right? Because the example I would give is when you bought your first car, right? You didn't know what you were doing. You know what the parts were and how to finance, you know, all that stuff, right? By the time you buy your second car, a little better experience. By the time you buy your fifth car, you know what you're looking for. You know who your guy is at the dealership. It's an easy process, right? Well, nobody goes to college five times. It's all first time consumers, and almost nobody goes to college as a student athlete more than once. Just statistically, even parents of one Division I student athlete, their next son or daughter is probably not going to go through the same recruiting process and do it again. So I just want to get some information out there on what this really is, what this is like, and how you can come to campus prepared to be successful right out of the gate. On top of that, something you guys do a lot on your show, in the transfer portal era, right, things have changed even more. Free transfer portal and pre-NIL world, you would be a 17-year-old boy, if you're talking baseball, going to play with 21, 22-year-old men. And that's a hard transition. Now with the grad year, the COVID year, the transfer portal, it might be a 24-year-old guy you're trying to take a spot from, and you're 17. And if you're not physically ready to do that, I'm going to say it's impossible. There are genetic freaks out there that just, they break every mold you can imagine. But the average 17-year-old getting a spot over a 23, 24-year-old grown man is incredibly hard, right? So the second half of the book is a 12-week training program. Basically, when you sign your contract to play in the spring or senior year, what do you do leading up that first day on campus to be ready for first day in the weight room, first day of base running, first day of conditioning, whatever your first day might be?
You are speaking our language here, Angelo. I mean, it's. I think the physical transition for most guys is one of the biggest jumps that they have to make, to exactly what you're saying, that you're just not seeing 150-pound kids go to college anymore. Guys need to be physically prepared to take that on. And it's not just the physical piece. It's when you get in the weight room with a bunch of grown men who've been in there for 3 or 4 years, who are in a program, that's intimidating in itself. And there's enough pieces of the puzzle when you transition from high school to college that make it difficult. If kids are prepared to step into a weight room, they've already got a leg up on everybody else that they're competing with, because it's one less thing that's stressful for them.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it's just a massive piece of the puzzle for high school kids to make sure that this is a huge part of their focus, not only in the recruiting process, but in their preparation to actually go and compete when competing really matters. And that's when you step on campus in the fall.
Right. I mean, most guys, you have about 40 guys around in the fall. Not everybody's going to be there in the spring, and definitely not if you're going to be playing in the spring, right? So I always feel like, if you're a freshman, that fall is super important, that first fall on campus, to impress your coaches and make your mark and let them know you can help out and win some games in whatever capacity that is for you, hitting, pitching, base running, whatever it is. But I do think if you can come to campus ready and prepared, you're going to give yourself a running start against your competition on the team and in the league and the games you play against, right? The other thing I think we've been dealing with in college sports for the last 10, 15 years, I think a really good thing, is addressing mental health, right? We've never been more cognizant of it. And if you ask any college athlete, what are their biggest stressors, what are their biggest sources of anxiety, especially your younger, your freshman, sophomores, it's passing a conditioning test, being physically prepared to play, and being at the level I was recruited to play at, right? So I always say, if you could check those boxes before you get to campus and come physically ready, I'm not saying you won't experience any mental health situations, because you very well may, but that's one thing that might cause you stress and anxiety that's off your plate. Now you can address learning the playbook, passing your classes, social, whatever's next. But the one thing you can definitely control before you get to a college campus is what kind of shape you're in, how strong you are, and how physically, mentally, emotionally ready you are for what that coach is going to throw at you on day one.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, to kind of extend on that, for young guys who are going through this, right, you're talking, 15, 16, 17-year-olds who are aspiring to be a college athlete, say they've never really been in the weight room much. Like, what are the key focus areas for these young guys? And like, what are some things that you stress in that book in terms of that preparation?
I think the one thing when people hear about my job, probably similar to you guys, right? They hear we work with high level athletes, kids who get recruited to play big time college baseball. And they think we're training the super scientific, very specific skill sets. And in my world, most kids that I deal with at 15, 16 year old age kid, we need the basics more than anything else, right? We live in a weird world where I meet freshmen in college that can throw a ball 90 plus miles an hour and can't do a body weight squat, can't do a body weight lunge, can't skip, can't push or pull their upper body. I think the fitness industry does a lot of things well. And one thing we dropped the ball on is we're all trying to sell kids and their parents the third and fourth floor of a house, right? We got to do single arm dumbbell presses on a physio ball. We got to do stuff on a Bosu ball. We got to use a $5,000 Kaiser pulley machine. That's all great. But if the foundation isn't there to do that stuff, you're really setting yourself for failure. Like you're building a house with a great third floor and a really bad foundation. I think baseball kids are a little unique too. I put softball in this category too. My daughter is a pretty serious softball player. If you're good, you're playing so much baseball, right? And so much softball. When do you really train? So one thing I'm pretty clear in the book, and I always tell parents and kids, figure out a way to make this work for you. Like, I'm not going to tell you, don't do any showcases, just do heavy squats every Friday, you'll be okay. That's not true. You got to go be seen by coaches and be where the people that can help your career are. But is there ways you can be a little creative and make it work around your schedule so you can actually get bigger and stronger? Because one thing I think in baseball is we take football kids, there's a very clear off season, right? You take basketball, they play in the summer, the fall, the late. Baseball is potentially 12 months a year from when you're 8 or 9 until you're 18 or 19, right? So you got to be, objectively evaluate the year and be like, I got to treat these camps and these showcases and this part of the year as my in season. And then if I show up sore to this summer league game that's not that important, that's okay, because I'm getting bigger and stronger for the next thing that really matters. But I think sometimes you got to sacrifice, not feel great every day and be sore and be banged up in a good way, right? Not injure yourself, but tax your body. And then, recovering bigger, stronger, faster for the next thing that really matters.
I think the in-season balance is a hard one to strike. And I want to talk about that from a college perspective because I think high school kids can learn. Hearing from someone like yourself who does this with college athletes at an extremely high level, but we stress to the guys that we work with, we've talked about on the podcast, is that specifically guys kind of in the Northeast, they've got the cold weather stuff. November to March is when those guys usually get after it. And then they get into the season and a lot of kids forget about the weight room. And all of a sudden, all those gains that you've had, they go downhill and you're starting from scratch again, as opposed to plateauing and making sure that the next time you really start to get after it in the weight room, that you have the ability to see another upswing. It's a little bit different in college. I mean, me and Keith have been through this, but can you talk a little bit about out of season, how you handle guys and what that looks like, and then also what you do in season to make sure that these guys stay strong, they stay healthy? How does that work with it at Seton Hall for you guys?
Okay, so let's start with the fall. We'll go from fall to winter. We'll fall around the year. That works for you guys, okay? Falling around the bases, if you will. When we get in the fall, we'll lift weights 3 times a week. It'll be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'll bring in a group of new position players at 6 a.m., returning position players at 7 a.m., and then the pitchers lift in the afternoon after they throw, usually like 4, something like that, depending on how the day breaks down. With our position guys, on the 3 days, we'll do one pretty heavy leg day. We'll do some upper body stuff. We'll do our squats, our box jumps, our RDLs. I'll call our big leg day, if you will, right? Then that'll be a Monday, say. On a Tuesday, we'll do some straight ahead speed development, right? We'll do our starts, our base stealing, our straight ahead top end speed stuff. On Wednesday, we're back in the weight. We're doing a heavier upper body day, right? So we're doing our pressing, our pulling, our heavier upper body stuff. Thursday, we're doing change of direction. And then on the conditioning side of things, and then on Fridays, we do a single leg heavy movement. Like we do a heavy single leg lunge, single leg step up, something like that. Some single arm pulling and pressing for the upper body. And then we'll do some kind of conditioning Friday afternoon. And that's pretty much our fall schedule. We get the fall ball in October. That Friday will get a whole lot lighter, playing 3 games Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then when we get to November and December, that's pretty much the template, right? Our guys go home from mid-December to early January. I send them home with a workout, very similar to what we did in the fall. We're lucky at Seton Hall, we recruit a lot of Jersey kids, or we might have 8, 9, 10 guys training with me over the holidays voluntarily, which is great. It's the best thing. They really get a head start on the other guys. Then we get back in January, we follow that template basically for the beginning. And then once we go in season, we play normally Big East game Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mondays are off day, right? So the guys got to get in the weight room on their own. And get what it's usually that's our real lift of the week, right? We'll squat, we'll do some kind of heavy press, some kind of heavy hamstring work, some kind of heavy pull, and then we'll play a midweek game Tuesday or Wednesday. And then either Wednesday or Thursday afternoon during practice before we leave on the next road trip, we'll do a lighter lift, some single arm stuff, some single leg stuff, stuff like that. And then that's our season. That takes us right through, hopefully, Memorial Day weekend of the Big East tournament. We're still playing then. And then the minute we're done, guys go to summer ball, right? So I send home a very basic workout for summer ball. And I tell the guys, here's a basic blueprint. When you get your schedule, know your games, know what you're doing, text me, email, we'll figure it out, and we'll make a plan. I mean, the other thing is summer ball is big, too. We have a really nice weight room at CNO. We're very fortunate. Summer ball, that might not be the case, right? You might be in a high school weight room, you might be in a home gym, you might be in a YMCA that hasn't been refurbished in 30 years. So I'll get, you know, pictures of guys like, hey, this is where I have access to. What do? It's like a dumbbell rack, a broken med ball, and a bad bar. And we'll have a talk, we'll make it work, but that's what summer ball is like for a lot of guys, right? They get back in August, the guy give them 2 or 3 weeks totally off, and then we start the process again in September. For our pitchers, it's a little bit different, right? We still do the majority of our heavy work in the fall. We just tailor around their throwing schedules. A pitching coach came on, Jimmy Moran, the last couple of years, really up to date on this stuff, really likes Kevin's conversation. So what guys do, they say they're their Friday starters, so we take that guy. He'll throw on Friday. We'll come in on Saturday, do a heavy lift. Sunday is kind of a stretch out, med ball, that kind of day. Monday, we'll do another fairly heavy total body lift. The Tuesday, we kind of lighter day. Wednesday, we do like a primer type workout, and then Friday's back throwing again. We're on 15 pitchers, so we kind of really personalize the program at a pretty high level. We know we're at a college, not a professional organization.
I think it's important that with everything you just very succinctly laid out, that younger kids have to understand, and you know, we've talked about this a lot with Nunzio and Dan Taylor and just and coaches in general who come on, because this is one of the biggest things that, you know, probably in your 20 years, I would venture a guess to say that like baseball is probably was one of the furthest ones behind when it came to lifting, whereas now it's not. Billy was on at Wake Forest, like they lift 48 weeks out of the year, I think, right? Is that what he said, Andy? 48? But it's become so important for younger kids when you get to college to understand like how physical you have to be in order to be able to legitimately be able to compete at the college level. And not only, you know, I always pull the string a little bit further. Like it's not just competing. It's being able to withstand what it is you're about to go through. And, you know, I thought you nailed it earlier with mental health and everything else. Like, it is a huge stressor because you have never gone through a season in which you're about to go through. Like you can travel, like you can tell me you did everything you wanted in high school and summer. Like you have not gone through a college baseball season yet where you're lifting 5 days a week. You're also practicing 6 days a week. Oh, by the way, you have to go to school, and that's just fall. And then you're going to roll into the spring and you're playing 56 games and you're playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You're going to play Tuesday or Wednesday. You're traveling. Again, you still have to go to school. And that doesn't even take into account, like, you got to eat. You still have to lift. You have to do your laundry. You have to do all these things that you have never had to do before. And I think, you know, I'm so glad that you, like, we started where we did with this and you brought this up, that, like, it's paramount for younger kids and families who are going through the recruiting process to understand what this does for you. Because I think sometimes younger kids kind of see the gains they get while they're in high school, and it's like, okay, yeah, I just put on 15 pounds of muscle. Awesome. And like, we don't necessarily continue that trend where it's like, you can continue to do this and you're going to get like, they see like how good they got doing that. And it's like, okay, that's good enough. Like, yeah, but look how much more you could do if you just continue to elevate up to where you are. And I think like, I mean, I'm fired up right now. So
nice, man. I love it. Okay, three things on that real quick. There's a chapter in the book called Work Capacity 101, right? And what I've seen in my decades doing this, the biggest thing that breaks a college athlete is they're all skilled, is work capacity. And it's the idea of being able to do this every day, day in and day out. And every sport, but we'll use baseball today, obviously, it's a marathon. Just to use a cliche, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And when I see this thing where these kids are coming out of high school and they have personal trainers, they worked out at really high level development places, the training and conditioning center. but they might have done it on Monday, and then they came back on Thursday, and they had 2 days to recover in between of mom and dad making the best food and driving them, and no academic stressors because their high school might be academically challenging. And now we're going to ask you to do that level workout on Monday, come back and do it on Tuesday, come back and do it on Wednesday, and repeat that for 15 weeks in a row. So I think if you can improve your work capacity, the earlier you can do that, the better off you're going to be when you get to college, right? And that's number one. Number two is the eating, the laundry, the sport, the study hall. We can argue all day whether college is a valuable experience, right? Financial commitment is insane that kids and their families are making. Well, one thing I think it teaches you really well is first day of class, you get a syllabus, and the professor sticks to the syllabus. If you do your end, then, okay, I have an assignment on March 1st, April 1st, and May 15th. I got to do my papers, whatever it is, right? And I think one thing that gets better the second year of college for everybody, I see it for freshman, sophomore year, is they understand what the year is like and plan around that, right? So like I always tell, I joke around with our guys all the time. We have a pretty cool social life at Seton Hall. The baseball house, from what I understand, is a really fun place to party. And we got Hoboken down the street and we got New York City down the other street. So I don't think they're staying in every night and getting 8 hours sleep, drinking 8 ounces of water and never having a beer. That's a lie, right? But I tell you, if I'm going to bring in a weight room early, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, you got to be in the house. Saturday night, go out. Be smart about it, right? Same thing with food. When I see a kid walking across campus with a Dunkin' Donuts bag, that's because he or she didn't plan the day and have good food with them early on, right? Because you could have made a peanut butter and jelly. You could have some chicken and rice in your bag. You could have thought this out a little better. If you're drinking a Coke, you could have filled up your water bottle. We got the refill thing in the waiting room. You could have came and did it in my office, right? So I tell people, you know, once you know your schedule, plan around it, right? Because baseball is one sport, like you said, kids put on 15 pounds of muscle because they're maturing, and then that season just wears them down, man. There's no opportunities to eat. There's double headers with no food in the middle sometimes. There's 18-hour bus rides with no food sometimes. So, I mean, you got to plan ahead for that and bring a lunch, bring a dinner, bring your water bottle, whatever it is, and be ready for it ahead of time. And the other thing real quick, college strength coaches have a little bit of an advantage over high school and pro strength coaches with the gains kids can make only because of the age we get to get them, right? We get them right at the cusp of going from boys to men or girls to women, right? So when you see a college strength coach talk about, oh, our average player gains 25 pounds and this much on their bench press, this much on their squat, that's probably true. I never argue that. But a lot of these, you're dealing with kids during the absolute peak of their physical growth and development where they can make those massive gains if they commit to it. And if you can build that foundation when you're in high school and come to college really ready to go, you'll see exponential gains instead of incremental gains.
It's interesting you say that. I'm going to name drop for a second. Shout out to an old friend of mine who's one of the strength guys for the Arizona Cardinals. But I remember when he got into professional football and he was working with the Panthers at the time. And I was asking him about it. He's like, it's totally different in college for exactly the reason that you said that in college, you're constantly trying to help guys get to a different strength level because they come in as 18-year-olds. When you start working with that professional athlete, it's less about the gains and more about the maintenance of it. Also in the NFL, like I can't bust your butt in the weight room on Thursday if you need to play 65 snaps at defensive end on Sunday. I need to make sure you feel good on Sunday. And that it's so different for college athletes because they're in that sweet spot where you have a chance to put muscle on a frame, to learn how to move a little bit better, to learn how to stay healthy, which is another thing I want to touch on, because I think that when we were playing in the early 2000s, we're just in there lifting weights, trying to get as strong as we can. I think all the science tells us now that this strength and conditioning is super important for injury prevention and being able to stay healthy.
Yeah. And I think at a very basic level, just a body that's stronger and moves better will get injured less, right? And I think one of the things you've seen in baseball, kind of different than other sports, the insane injury rates now are probably kind of a product of kids getting really good at very specific movements very early in their career, right? And not being able to do anything else, right? Just a pitcher that could throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball but has to do a fielding play and can't move laterally whatsoever, turns his ankle and misses three starts because of that, right? So I think if we can just build general athleticism and put some hypertrophy and some muscle mass on a young man's body, he's going to be more injury resistant, right? That's the bare minimum. Now I think we get into, let's look at the demands of the sport and look at where the most baseball players get injured, do an injury assessment on every guy and say, like, okay, you have weak internal rotation. Here's a list of exercises we could do to help get that better. Because you're going to throw a baseball 1,000 times a week. Eventually, the system is going to break down. If we can identify the weak link in that equation, we can get better at that, right? And that's one thing. I think the kind of the baseline of that is just getting bigger, stronger, moving better. We've kind of known that for a long time. And I think there's a different value to that. But now I think we're a little bit better pinpointing it. And the other thing we've gotten way better in the last couple of years is what we'll call load management, right? It's kind of a dirty word in the NBA right now. But the idea of like kind of tracking fatigue and looking at how fatigued you are. And, you know, maybe if you're put a pitching rotation together for your team, everybody's squatting heavy on Friday, but one guy is the starter that night. That doesn't make sense for that guy, right? So how do you kind of put the puzzle pieces around to keep everybody as healthy and as primed for their appearances and starts and games as they possibly can be? So I think it's a good mix of both. And the old school approach is, like you said, just lifting weights and getting strong. There's a place for that, right? There's also a place to look at movement and individual assessments and what each individual body needs to get better and more resilient, injury preventative as well.
So you hit on an interesting topic with the pitchers, and I want to dive into this because there's two different pitchers. There's your starters, which are probably, I'm guessing, from a strength and conditioning perspective, a lot easier to handle because everything's kind of scripted. If you know a guy's throwing on Friday, you can build the whole week in the weight room around him. But then you got bullpen guys, which is a little trickier because a bullpen guy needs to be primed to go on Friday. But say Seton Hall goes and, you know, knocks the doors off of somebody in the Big East on Friday and they don't have to use one of their leverage bullpen guys. He needs to be ready to go for Saturday. How do you manage that?
I mean, at the most basic level, right, I kind of look at when they go into games and they treat that almost as a start if you can. And kind of base the week around that as if he was a starter that day. Now you get those weird asterisk cases where like a guy might appear Friday and Sunday. Some cases Saturday, Sunday. It's kind of a weird thing with the relievers. But I think in some cases as a strength coach, you got to communicate with the pitching coach, right? And communicate with the relievers because they know their body better than you do, right? Now, if it's a younger guy, if it's a freshman, I'll be really strong in my stance of, you did, you know, X amount of your outing was X yesterday. We got to get these big movements in today to be ready for it. Now, if it's an older guy that's been around a little bit, he's like, hey, man, my hamstrings are really whatever it is. We'll talk and maybe we'll do a goblet squat instead of a back squat. We'll do a hamstring curl instead of a remaining deadlift. I'm cool to make those changes. But I think in our profession, I think you kind of alluded to it before, at the professional level, you really got to trust the players because they know their bodies incredibly well, right? The college level, they might not know as well. But you got to at some point think like, all right, I know all the stuff about the body in general, but you know all the stuff about your body. So let's collaborate on this and make it work. And then I think the other thing with the relievers is you got to just make sure in a span of a week, you're getting the right amount of work in, right? Because those kids that make a lot of appearances, they could theoretically go a month without really training if you let that kind of slip away. But if you stay on top of them and make sure you get a couple of good days in around their expected appearances, you could stay relatively strong and maybe even get stronger in season. If you work it the right way and good communication with the pitchers and the pitching coach.
Yeah, I imagine that communication has got to be huge. And it's interesting. There's some programs that are kind of trying to, in recent years, they're working in these pods with pitchers. So they all have kind of a defined throw day. And part of it is trying to get as many of your good arms to throw as frequently as possible. But the other piece of it is, exactly what you're talking about from a strength and conditioning and throwing perspective, it's easier to schedule all that out. I don't think we'll see if it ends up taking. I think most schools take the route that I believe Seton Hall does, where, you know, you've got your traditional starters and you've got your bullpen guys, and you have to be able to fit in their preparation depending on when they throw, how much they throw, to kind of exactly what you're saying. For the high school kids listening, if you're a pitcher, I cannot stress, and I'm thinking you'll probably agree with me on this, having a plan for that non-start day all the way leading up, like that's what, in my mind, that's what prepares kids to show up on the next start day, the best version of themselves. And that if you don't have a plan for Saturday, Sunday through Thursday, that next Friday you show up, you're not going to be primed and ready to go. And I think a lot of high school kids, they miss out on the ability to show up the best that they can frequently. because they don't have that plan in place.
Agreed. And I think one thing that's hurting that a little bit, and you guys know baseball better than I do, especially youth and high school baseball. But if you're just, say, for example, you're a high school baseball pitcher and you pitch every Friday, you kind of know what that entails, right? And your coaching kind of schedule you around that. I think in a world where you're the high school pitcher on Fridays, but then you have a travel team and then you're going to showcases on Saturday and Sunday, and then you have an in-house pitching coach on Tuesday and Thursday, it gets real hard, right? Am I right? It's much easier said than done. So I think, again, you got to really, I would never tell you to take your foot off the gas. I think everything you do is important. But to some extent, you got to think about when you really have to be, like you said, the best version of yourself. And if that's your conference tournament, if it's the showcase where all the college coaches are, if you know major league scouts are at this thing, then I would schedule that week to prime yourself for that kind of thing. And then if you don't finish a high school game or something, maybe it's not as important. But I think you got to really just be smart and strategic about your career. And one thing about youth sports and college sports is a big thing now to talk endlessly on podcasts and Twitter and X and how it should be, right? How this should go. Nobody cares how I think this should go. I'm very cognizant of that. My version of it is, here's the way it is. Here's where you can be successful because I've seen it for 20 years, right? So the conversation I like is what you guys do. You have pitchers, you have positions. How do you make it work in the way it is now? And how do you get your body ready to perform, like you said, the best version of yourself when recruiters are there, scouts are there, your team needs you, whatever it might be that day. But I think if we live in a weird time where kids are doing so many. It's a weird thing. I think you see if you guys agree with me on this. Kids are overtrained at individual sports and undertrained at overall physical development. And it's a weird time in history of you have so many specialists that are so young that can't do just the basic tenets of physical education anymore.
No, it is. It's weird. Like it's gotten to the point where, and I don't know, I have my own theories on it, but like one of my leading theories is that you have a lot of people who rely on what they knew from the 80s and 90s when they played high school baseball or insert the sport and don't necessarily understand how much everything has changed in each and every individual sport, but especially from the strength and conditioning standpoint. Like, you know, I I've said this before, like I feel like Andy and I were on the the leading edge in, you know, the early 2000s of getting into like baseball becoming really, really buying into the weight room and getting baseball specific movements and change of direction stuff, like all the things that like are kind of are commonplace now, whereas before, like, you know, the 90s and like I feel like that wasn't a thing. Like, and if it was like those were outlier things, like we're just kind of testing to see what this is. And now it's kind of proven that it works. And I think like people just think that from a skill set standpoint, as long as you're good enough skill set wise, that's the door. That'll leave the door open for you to be able to get recruited. And then like the strength and conditioning component and the injury prevention component have become so huge that it can actually hold you back. Cause now it's gotten to the point when you're recruiting, it's like, I don't know, man, he's not that physical. Like his body's going to break down. He might get hurt. Like his injury prevention might be high. And like all things equal between two players, most coaches are going to err on the side of the guy who's a lot more physical than the guy who's not. Like, I don't think you hear, like when I first started coaching, it was like, get him in the weight room for a year. That kid will be good for, you know, 2-3 years. And now it's like, we don't have a year, man. Like this kid needs to be damn near ready to go when he sets foot on campus.
Yeah. Well, a couple things on that. One, I think if you look at the stats on kids that transfer and particularly transfer down a level, right? Like they go to Division I school, don't get any playing time, decide to go to Division II or III. That could be the perfect decision for that kid and his family. That's not a terrible thing, right? You have a great career and a good job in your health at a lower level. But if you look at the kids that come in that are just all skill and no physicality, their success rate in Division I college sports in general is not very high, right? They're going to be injured. They're not going to get playing time. And now the transfer portal era, either they're going to decide to leave or the coach even decides it's time for them to leave. And they're going to end up somewhere else. It might be a junior college, then a D2 school, something like that. But the kids that really succeed come ready and are their body ready to withstand just the toll college baseball takes on them, right? So I think if you're a 13-year-old now, and there's a kid in your high school that was like a great skill guy, and like, well, he never went to the weight room, so I'm never going to the weight room. Well, let's look at where that kid goes by the time they're 24, 25, 26, right? there's some chance they were so skilled they meant they're playing Major League Baseball. I would bet my money on there's a very good chance D1 Kyle didn't work out. They got injured. They couldn't keep up physically. Somebody else more physical came and took the spot when they were sophomore or junior, and now they're doing things outside of baseball with their life, right? So I think those outliers do exist, but if you have guys that have long careers, taking care of the body is part of it, and building that foundation is definitely part of it, right?
Yeah, and I think, like, it's – Andy and I talk about this all the time. Like, we live in a world in sports where people make the outliers the rule. Yep. And that's, like, that's not the case. And I think the other side of it is I don't think I honestly don't believe this, that I don't think people actually understand. Like, if you went and stood next to a Major League Baseball player, like, how physical those guys actually are. You know what I mean? Like we know it because we've played at a high level. We've played with guys. We know guys who played in the big leagues. We know it, right? But, like, it's hard for people to kind of wrap their heads around, like, how well they move, because you can't tell in a baseball. We can, but, like, most people can't. But, like, those guys are uber physical. It's not like you don't have a lot of Pedro Martinez's rolling around at, like, a buck 80 throwing 95. Like, he's an outlier. Like, a lot of those guys are super, super physical.
Hey, I always tell people to remember, if you watch Major League Baseball on TV, or even, let's be honest, college baseball or, like, you know, minor league baseball, the size, that the fact that everybody is 6 foot, 200 pounds and up makes that seem normal on the field, right? But if Bryce Harper walked in a mall right now, every single regular guy and girl would be like, gee, that guy's a monster, right? Same thing with most quote unquote average major league, right? So I think one thing, when you're 6'4 and 240 and strong and just a house, but everybody around you is that, it makes it look normal. When in reality, the quote unquote average major league baseball player is the biggest, strongest guy to ever come to your retro fitness, right? Even the guys we think of not big physical guys, they are by regular standards big physical men. So I think that's one thing you got to kind of impress upon people right away. And the thing that I've been confused about for the last 20 years that the internet has been a real thing, there's never been more data on what these guys look like, what they can do, how big. I deal with kids all the time that they are none of those things, right? If the average major leaguer is 6'1", 220, and you're 5'7", 160, it might be time to think about another career path, honestly, right? Or find a way to get to that size. So it's kind of a joke, but, like, you see what these guys do. We know how big the ballparks are. We have stats ad nauseum on every guy that's ever played baseball. If you're not a part of that, if you're not close to that, you got to start thinking, how do you get close to that? Or maybe it's time to do something else, right? An example, the one thing I say in a book, I think it's serious. I think all athletes need to do an honest self-assessment, right? So I always say, when you sign your contract to play in college, first thing you should do if you're a baseball player is contact a strength coach. And here's why. That person is the first person you're going to deal with on campus, right? Realistically, you're going to lift and run before you hit throw baseball practice the way the baseball schedule goes, right? And I would ask that person, what's expected of me on day one? Is it a conditioning test? Is it a weight room test? Whatever it is. And then figure out where you fit in that spectrum and go start getting better at it. Because if you know you have to run, to say, for example, a 6-minute mile on September 1st, and you go try it on June 1st, it takes you 9 minutes, it doesn't mean you can't do it. It means you have 3 months to figure it out, right? But if you don't make that call and don't know what you're getting into, then you're going to fail the test, right? Then you're going to be the weakest guy or girl in the weight room. Then you're going to struggle when you get there. But I think if you can get the playbook early and figure out what you got to do, you will be, if you take care of business that summer, and you might be the best freshman, or at least the best physically prepared freshman going to that fall ball.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that people don't realize, like, everyone is big, so they all look normal. Like, Andy and I talked about it. Like, I think it was 2023 when LSU won the World Series. Like, the average guy was, like, 6'1", 225 on that roster. And I was, like, Andy and I were talking, I was, like, I'm 6'2". Like, I played a 215. Like, I'm below average on the LSU baseball team, you know, 20 years ago. And, like, and then that's not hard for me to wrap my mind around, but it kind of is. Like, it's like, that's how physical and big these guys are. And I think it's something that people need to know.
it's a couple things, man. As human beings in the United States of America, we're getting bigger, right? We're just getting bigger across the board for a bunch of reasons that are well beyond the concept of my expertise or probably your podcast, right? But then the other side of that is that baseball players have gotten progressively bigger since the 90s, or since the 80s, probably started, then the 90s era gotten bigger. And that's by nature weeded out the smaller, not as strong guys, right? If you get what, you know, in it, where Mark McGwire was the only big jack guy in the 90s, or maybe him and Jose Canseco in the 80s. Now by the 2000s, they got five big guys like that. By the 2010s, they got seven. And by 2020, just the whole roster. So that kind of just happened. The bar's been raised so many times. And the other thing I think is kind of interesting too is you kind of talk about the 20 years you guys have been involved in this. So a lot of those guys that were players in the 90s, and they were the only guys lifting weights, only guys being big physical guys. Now they're your coaches, they're your general managers, they're your scouts. So they've changed almost, they've changed the game externally, but what they did to their bodies internally, right? Because they saw how this works. And now kind of the idea, if you look at most baseball coaches, they mostly lift, they're mostly in pretty good shape, right? They mostly understand the value of it. Whereas if you went to a baseball clinic or something in the 80s or 90s, the coaches and scouts and administrators look like grandpas, right? Now they look like jack middle-aged guys. So because that's what they were when they were players, and a lot of times that's what they're looking for out of a new crop of players. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's such a big piece of the puzzle. And I mean, to your point, I mean, you got a good example of it on staff at Seton Hall with Giuseppe. Like Giuseppe looks like he could still play shortstop today. And he hasn't played in years, but he's looking for guys who have this same drive and willingness to excel that he did when he was a player. And there's more and more coaches like him in the ranks now. And with all the data that we have in most of these programs, like they have people like you who come in and can really help these kids. It's just such a core part of every program at this point. Like the physicality and being prepared for it is just, it's just massive. And I think that we get into this cycle of skill acquisition, right? And I think that in college baseball, like if you go and watch a Seton Hall versus UConn game, it's eye-opening how physical guys are. The skill acquisition can happen in baseball pretty easily because a lot of it's just reps. But if you have the prettiest swing and it all looks really good, but you can only hit the ball 250 feet, I'll take the guy with a little bit of a jacked up swing, but I can see him hit the ball 390 because I can clean that up. But you can tighten up swings and do all of that. But if you're not physical enough to perform at that level, none of that really matters. And I think that gets lost in the equation of like, well, I want my swing to look good, or I want to be really good at looking fundamentally sound as an infielder. When at the end of the day, like you got to have certain foot speed, you got to have certain bat speed, you got to have certain arm speed. And it doesn't always have to look perfect, but that prerequisite athleticism it's required to play at the level of Seton Hall. It's required to play college baseball these days. And that just being skilled generally is not enough anymore.
Yeah, it definitely requires a physical component of it. And then I think that's one thing that the game's gotten better at in the last couple of decades, I would say, right? Guys, your baseball players, I think, go back to the 80s, 90s, baseball players weren't regarded, maybe they were called not the best athletes, right? Your football guys were, your wrestlers, your gymnasts. But then that's a totally different thing now where baseball players are regarded as some of the best athletes on the planet, as they absolutely should be, right? And there's no question about that. So I think if you're just a young kid out there, take care of the physical side of things, right? Do your skill acquisition, learn your position, get great at the things that make you a good baseball player, or realize through some of these make you a better overall athlete, will they have a better baseball career in the short term and hope they extend that career in the long term and have a longer injury-free career.
Yeah, spot on. The other thing I wanted to ask is, obviously you've been doing this for a while. What are some of the steepest learning curves you see for freshmen when they get on campus?
The biggest thing is this. Across the board, this umbrella term work capacity is hard on these guys, right? Just the amount of time we're doing. We might do three baseball activities in a day. We might lift early in the morning. We might go to class, come back for a hitting group, take a break, and then go do like a team practice, team defense later in the afternoon, right? That's something almost no one in a high school has ever done. And we might do that 5 days a week, depending on what the week is like. And then we come back and play scrimmages on the weekend, maybe in the fall. So, and work capacity is the biggest thing. I think for a lot of the pitchers and a handful of position guys, we deal with some muscle imbalances and not great mobility and flexibility. And if you can deal with that earlier in your life, the better you're going to be when you get to the college level. So just being able to do a squat, an overhead squat, overhead lunge, those basic positions make it better in the weight room. And then one thing we see with baseball kids, maybe more than some other sports, just a lack of overall conditioning. And I don't mean being able to go on a mile conditioning, but they're being able to do a maybe a set every minute on the minute in the weight room, being able to take multiple rounds of BP back to back. And then the one piece of advice I always like to say is, if that's somewhere before your freshman year, you have to pick between strength or conditioning. For some reason, you can't do both. And this is going to sound a little weird to baseball guys, but I want to explain myself. I think you're better off putting your time and money and effort into conditioning. And here's why. If you show up your first semester and you're kind of lost in the weight room, you need a spotter, I can't lift as much as my upperclassman counterpart, that's why the strength staff is there. That's what they're there to help you do. And if it's allowed, if we're in New Jersey, we're cranking EDM music at 6 a.m. every day because we're all down the shore, Guido meathead like me, and I love it, right? But you can get lost in that mix, right? If you go to the first day of conditioning and you can't finish the drills, always the last person to finish, and you're doubled over, thrown up in a garbage can, calling for the trainer, you put a bullseye on your back immediately as a liability to that team. So I always tell people, you got to be ready for the conditioning. That shows the coaching staff a lot about you on day one, and then go get good at the weight room. And I think even though baseball is the most, you could argue, most anaerobic sport there is, I still think we need to have that conditioning foundation built to be able to do the amount of things we ask you to do when you first get to a college campus.
Yeah, that first time you got to take 100 ground balls during batting practice, if you're not ready for it.
It's relentless. I feel like sometimes when I do these interviews, I always want to paint the bad side of the picture. There's a lot of great things about college baseball.
It's really fun.
Even at a small school like Seton Hall, man, we get a bunch of people out watching the games on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, and we got a Big East opponent in. The game matters, and we got a good pitcher going. It's really fun, man. It's a great experience. They make the best friends of your life if you do it right. And just the things you learn and the things you're going to push your body, I think it's a great thing. But I think if you're a high school kid now or a parent of a high school kid, you got to realize it's a great thing that comes with a lot of work and a lot of responsibility. And if you show up prepared and take that seriously, you can make this some of the best 4, 5, 6 years of your life, depending, the transfer portal stuff. Now it's really long, but best years of your life.
Yeah, that's incredibly well said, that you do all of this for the exact moment that you're talking about, that Friday night game that matters, you're fighting to get in the conference tournament, or you're fighting to try to get the one seed for the conference tournament. All the stuff that we've talked about, the 5 days a week strengthening and conditioning in the fall, the preparation in the off season, the 5 weeks of travel you have being a Northeast team, having to go places, you work your butt off for those exact moments. And those moments are what are memorable. But in order to perform in that moment, you need to put in the work ahead of time. And some of that's built into you as a college player. Like, you don't really have a choice. You have to do that stuff. I think that sometimes it gets lost on the high school player, just exactly what's expected of you. Everything that you've talked about here today, that's across the board is kind of the bare minimum for a college athlete. Like, this is what you signed up for. And I think it's important, for a variety of different reasons, but probably just for expectations, to understand that when you step on campus that fall, it's go time. Nobody's waiting on you. And if you're prepared for it, you've got a chance to at least hold serve, hopefully excel. But if you don't take the time to prepare and you're not doing some of these things that college baseball players are doing right now, when you get there, it's not going to be what you think it's going to be, because you're not going to be in a position to excel, because you're constantly scrambling just to keep your head above water. And ideally, nobody has to go through that. Not all freshmen get to play, but if you're there and you're ready to go, you give yourself a chance. And I think that that's really important for people to understand.
I think the other thing too, and Angela, you'd probably agree, like the weight room, like the strength, you're dead right. If you put a bullseye on your back, if you're not ready. But I think you could, like, the flip side, like you were saying, the good thing, like, you can garner yourself a decent amount of street cred before you even set foot on the field if you are really good in the weight room and conditioning and get after it as a freshman. Because then it's like, damn, this kid came in ready to go. Like, all right, let's see what this kid can do. And you can get a little bit more street cred of, like, this kid gets after in the weight room. He's really good conditioning. Like, all right, man, this is like, we're ready to go with this guy.
Yeah, and one thing I say to our freshmen a lot, the kids that got, you know, you're on campus, you were the big man on campus in high school, and now you're just another guy in the freshman class. Find the role for yourself and find out how you can contribute. And like you said, you might not be on the field your freshman year, right? Can you be a leader in the weight room? Can you be a leader at conditioning? Can you be able to get the best GPA and help the team GPA come up? Can you make yourself valuable in some way that freshman year? And then maybe sophomore year, build on those strengths, you know, shore up those weaknesses, and now you're a player sophomore, junior year, right? I'm in a weird spot, you know, where the transfer portal hits us weird, particularly in baseball, where our best players leave to go up, right? Our worst kids that don't ever see playing down in the future go down a level, and our mid-level kids stay for 4 years at this point. That's kind of where we are, right? But I think if you find a way, if you're in that bottom tier, to make yourself valuable in some capacity, you might have a chance to play for us in your sophomore, junior year, right? I think there's a place for the transfer portal. It's the right decision for some guys. But I think, you know, to use another cliche, that sometimes the grass is greener on the other side, sometimes the grass is greener where you water it. And you might be better off trying to water it for a year or two and seeing where that leads, right? The joke I made the transfer portal is, remember, if you're not playing with us and you got a coach telling you if you transfer, you're our starting shortstop next year, that coach is saying that the 10 or 20 other guys right now, just playing the law of averages, that one of them says yes, right? So if two say yes, now you're fighting for the spot again. So just think about that and realize, you know, all the things you gotta look out for in the recruiting process, you gotta look out from the transferring process as well, because now it's like a second round of recruiting, and some of the things you thought you didn't hear or didn't do right the first time, some of those moves might be pulled on you again if you're not careful or more discerning.
Sometimes you just got to work for what you're going to get. And sometimes being in the same place with the same coaching staff and the same environment, that's the best place for guys to figure out how good they can be. The transfer portal, it's definitely changed things. But I don't think it fundamentally changes all the things that you need to do on a day-to-day basis. Because wherever you go, if you transfer out, you're still going to have to do everything that we talked about. You're still going to have to compete. Like, college baseball or college athletics as a whole, especially at the level Seton Hall plays, it's a meritocracy. You know, Giuseppe's responsibility as a coach and that staff is to put the best players on the field. And it's the player's responsibility to make his decisions really hard. But everything gets earned. And I think that's it's important for people to understand that, you know, the politics and all that stuff, it doesn't really exist in college sports. Like, the bottom line is, are you going to be able to help me get wins? And a lot of what guys do in the weight room, a lot of what they do in the fall practice, a lot of what they do on days that they don't have games is what dictates who gets opportunities. And to your point, the first thing you do when you get to campus as a freshman is you get in the weight room. It's the first thing you do. So being prepared for that's a pretty darn good place to start.
No question.
All right. Well, Angelo, we really enjoyed having you on, man. This is super informative. I'm glad we were able to knock out a time to get a chance to sit down and speak with you. Tell us where you can get your book.
The new book is The Next 4 Years, Compete, Win, and Thrive in College Sports. It's available on Amazon. Kind of like every other book, that's the best place to buy it. Just look up my name, Angelo Gingerelli. There's two books out there. Both are good, but this one's a little more baseball, college sports specific, obviously. And then if you want to follow me on social media, it's Angelo Gingerelli on Facebook and LinkedIn, and Mr. Fifth Round, MR, the number 5, THROUND on Instagram.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Angelo, obviously, you know, tell Giuseppe I said hello. I'm sure I'll run into him this spring, but thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.